When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Welcome back to the West London Sport QPR podcast as we finally get to discuss a win at Loftus Road following Tuesday's dramatic victory over Stoke. 4-2 win over the 10-man Potters, some 260 days after Jeff Beck last belted out Hi-Ho Silver Lining at Loftus Road, was a fitting end to an evening where the club did a fantastic job in marking the sad passing of Terry Venables last Sunday. Venables is, without doubt, one of the most important and influential figures in the club's history. Following his appointment in 1980, he took the team from the lower reaches of the second division to the FA Cup final and qualification for European football in just four seasons, before leaving to manage Barcelona. Rangers boss Marty Cifuentes laid a wreath on the pitch before kickoff, and the appreciation shown from both QPR and Stoke fans during the tribute of applause was magnificent. And he most certainly would have approved of the entertaining affair that was played out on the pitch. I'm joined, as always, by former Rangers striker and captain Kevin Gallen. Kev, a much-needed win, but the news of Terry's passing last Sunday sort of overshadowed the news, overshadowed the week in many ways. Was he someone you crossed paths with much during your career?
No, not really. I met him once or twice, shook his hand. You know, should have really told him what I thought about him, as in, you're the greatest QPR manager. I didn't. I just said, hello. Probably because I was probably in awe of him. I was only like 18, 19. I was at a match and he was there. But what a man for QPR, what a manager. But also, a lot of people forget he played for the club. But anyone you speak to who worked with him or worked under him or worked or played with him, you know, would say the greatest of things about how good he was, you know, how personable, you know, good-humoured, but also what a great manager and what a great coach. And, I remember Jerry Francis talking fondly of him when he was a manager at QPR, as in when he played with him. And I think he signed him for Crystal Palace maybe as well, and then signed him back for QPR. I don't know, but there's a connection of signings. But you know, the players that who played under Terry Venables in that QPR team in the early 80s, you know, the stuff they put on social media saying how, what a great man he was and what a great coach, and everyone followed it exactly what he said. And he was ahead of his time as a manager and as a coach. And you know, he's so well respected, not only at QPR, obviously, but all over England and Europe. Everyone knows who Terry Venables was, and even Pep Guardiola talking about him during the week and saying what an influence because of what he did when he left QPR and he won the title at Barcelona in his first season. And I don't think they'd won it for many years. So, I don't think that will ever happen again. I might be wrong, but... And there's no disrespect to QPR, but from going from QPR to Barcelona is one hell of a step up. Barcelona, one of the powerhouses of European world football. And he'd done such a great job at QPR that, you know, the people who ran Barcelona obviously were keeping an eye on him and said, that's the manager for us. And it paid dividends. And I think the next year they got to the final of the European Cup and they lost on penalties. And unfortunate for Terry, I mean, that would have been some hell of a story of, you know, within two seasons winning the La Liga and then going straight into winning the European Cup the following year. It would have been a hell of a bigger story than even just winning the title in his first season. But yeah, everyone talked about him, and watching QPR when I was lucky, maybe spoiled now looking back, but my first years of watching QPR was 1981, 82, you know, probably 1980 was a bit, can't sort of remember, but you know, that the time when we got to the FA Cup final and maybe should have won it, and then the next season putting that disappointment away and winning the second division title, and the following year qualifying for Europe. You know, it's unbelievable when you think about it. I mean, what an achievement, and you know, what a manager. And fair play to the players, they listened to everything what he said and done a fantastic job. And you know, people talk about the 1975, 1976 as the QPR's greatest ever squad or team, but that early 80s team can't be far behind.
Yeah, that's my vintage as well. My first game, I think, was 1983. They played Southampton, but, you know, there's players like Clive Allen and Simon Stainrod. It was a cracking team. And, yeah, I thought it was quite quite nice, actually, on Tuesday night during the game. The QPR back four stepped up in one, arm in the air. That was very reminiscent of a very Venables-type team. The back, you know, the offside trap was sort of down to a T, and Terry Finnick with his hand in the air, leading everyone up. It was, you know, I thought.
I mean, that was sort of never been seen. And, you know, I think in the late sort of 80s, early 90s, AC Milan started doing that under Sacchi, playing that offside, you know, pushing up really tight. But, yeah, unbelievable. You know, the free kick would be coming into QPR's box, and there obviously was a code word, and everyone would be on it. And as soon as the opposition went to take the free kick, they'd all step up 5 yards and catch them all offside. So very, very clever. And obviously, he was a very clever manager.
Good stuff. Right. So moving on to, you know, the action. Two games in quick succession. A narrow 1-0 defeat at Norwich last Saturday. I was working at that, and yeah, there was, you know, ultimately it ended in defeat, and you know, the football's a lot better, but you know, aside from Sam Field missing a very good chance right at the end, you know, Rangers didn't really trouble the keeper enough, and you know, and Norwich were there for the taking. But yeah, a lot better on Tuesday though, Kev. 4-2 win. Three goals at the loft then, four goals in the game. What's happening?
I know. It's been a long time talking about a win at home, but also to score so many goals as well. And, you know, fantastic atmosphere. I thought first half we weren't great. I thought Stoke surprised me. I didn't think they were as good as they were. I thought they had some really good movements, and I checked the stats, and it was, you know, it wasn't great possession-wise. 67 for them in the first half, 33 for us. So we were a little bit conceding possession, and we looked like we were sort of, you know, we did look dangerous on the counter-attack. We should have went 2-0 up. I mean, very poor miss by Lyndon Dykes. You know, everyone was, you know, raising their eyes as straight away. They equalised and rolling their eyes, and you thought it's going to be one of those days again, and then the man's sent off, and you think it's going for us. And then, to be fair, that the centre mid scored a really cracking goal from the edge of the box, and you're like thinking this is going to be one of those nights. But fair play, the manager made some really good, substitutions, and you know what he did was he took Dunn off and he brought on, you know, Clark Sauter, who, when you're playing against 10 men, you get more of the ball. And you need your better passers on the pitch. And what he done well with his, what was very good of his substitutions, he put on Clark Sauter, who's probably better on the ball than Jimmy Dunn. And he moved Ilias Chair into centre midfield for that extra pass. And and get on the ball and create more openings and more chances. And it worked a treat. And in the end, we deserved the 3 points. Some really good goals. And the atmosphere and the celebrations for the third was, you know, something I haven't seen down at QPR for a long while. So really good, really, really good result, but much needed. And hopefully, you know, can follow it on. And that's a bit of a confidence boost and get that jinx off the back, especially for the home form and scoring goals at the Loft.
Yeah, I mean, almost ironically, it was the four games Cifuentes has had in charge. I thought this was perhaps QPR's, well, certainly for 70 minutes, their poorest display. I thought Stoke in midfield were the better side. You know, being down to 10 men, it can always sometimes be more difficult to play against 10 men. But, I mean, albeit it was a good goal, their second goal, but very well taken. But, you know, it looked like Rangers were the team of 10 men, the way they defended that goal, the space he had to kind of pick his spot. You know, and perhaps a friend of mine said at the time, maybe he missed a trick not changing it when they went down to 10 men, but you can't, that's nitpicking a little bit because, you know, the changes he made were really proactive. It's unusual for, you know, a manager to change the centre-back and the right-back during a game. It's very, very rarely you see it, actually, but, you know, you've articulated, you know, the reason behind it, and it's good to see that a manager, I mean, Mick Beale gets a lot of stick for various reasons, but he was very good at making in-game changes in the games he had in charge of QPR. And, you know, that thinking on your feet as a manager is really important. And, you know, the introduction right at the end of Larkesh, that ultimately proved to be the match winner, you know, and credit to him for coming on and, you know, getting straight into the game. And that was an amazing piece of tenacity and desire. And just the boy who's up against, he just wanted it more, Larkesh, you know, he didn't give it up. And, you know, you put a low cross into the box, anything can happen, can't it? So,
I mean, going back to you're playing against 10 men, and usually, and especially if the 10 men have just gone 2-1 up. So now that 10 men are going to drop a little bit deeper and defend that lead and try and keep it tight. And that's why I said, like, putting, forgot about Cannon. Yeah, that was a really good substitution as well. But bringing the main one for me is bringing Ilias Chair into the centre midfield because now you have got more time on the ball. Because they're sitting off you, they go into a bank of four and a five, or a five and a four, and you have like a little bit more time on the ball. So you need your better players and your more technical players and your more creative players on the ball, because you're going to get. And it was an inspired proactive. You said a proactive move, bringing Ilias Chair into that position, because that's where you get more of the ball and a little bit more composure to pick that pass out, which he did, hit the post as well, which is very unfortunate. Really good shot. And it was very good, very, very much needed victory.
And just a word on Dykes. I mean, there was more than a few eyebrows being raised when he missed that chance where I was sitting anyway. It was more, you know, a few raised voices, and the voices got even louder when they scored almost immediately. And after he lost his man at the corner from that chance. But, you know, that second goal he scored, that was a top goal. That was a really high-class finish. And it just begs the question, how can a fella be clean through on goal and miss a chance like that and then, you know, pluck the ball out of the air on his chest and turn and swivel volley into the bottom corner? It kind of... I guess it's credit to him as well, like, because the crowd were, understandably quite frustrated. But, you know, he didn't go missing. He didn't get his head down. He just got on with it. And I suppose he deserves credit for that. But, you know, it's almost throw your hands in the air and say, you know.
Well, this is what I feel. I feel like when Lyndon Dykes has got time, too much time on the ball and too much time, you know, when he's trying to go through on goal, then when he's doing things sort of off the cuff and... I mean, just before he scored his second goal, he had the ball came into the box and he took a really good touch and he swiveled and he shot and it probably was going to go in, but got a deflection and went wide. So when he's not thinking about things and have too much time and he's just doing it off the cuff, then he looks like you said, he looks you know, he can finish better. He looks a better centre forward. I think when he has too much time to think about it, that's, I mean, I'm going back last season where there was a couple of chances. I think, was it, who did, was it Blackpool at home last season when he had one of the easiest chances ever and he had so much time?
I think it was a whole game.
Yeah, and he had so much time down at the school end and he missed. It's like, he doesn't have time and he just hits it. Then he sort of, that sort of, when he reacts quicker and just does it off the cuff and he looks a much better player and a much better centre forward. But fair play to him because he could have dropped his head. He didn't. And he scored a wonderful second goal, really. Chest and volley, swivel, volley. Very good. And it's nice to see. I bet he's also buzzing to score down at the Loft End as well.
Yeah. I mean, why is that, Kev? I mean, speaking to someone, you know, I've never played professional football, but you think, like, the easy chances, they just would be... Why is it? Why can't someone who's a professional footballer, why do they have, like, these sort of, like, when they think about it too much moments, it doesn't work out? Is it just confidence or is it just a natural thing? Is it?
No, I think it's, if you're thinking about it too much, you've got too many options. And then sometimes you pick the wrong option. And I think if you just do it straight away and without thinking, this is what I've got to do, bang, hit, chest, volley, go. Do you know what I mean? It's sometimes, you know, most goals are, for centre forwards, are pretty much one touch finishes in the 18-yard box or, you know, in that, I call it the second 6-yard box between the goal and the penalty spot. If there was another box, most goals are usually a one-touch finish or a two-touch control and hit. Very rarely you have three or four touches because you get closed down. And, you know, you practice that in training as well. You might be playing, they'll do rules, coaches will do a rule where they say, right, you're playing, say, an eight-side, small-sided game, and they'll say, okay, eight-side game, they might say two touch. You can only have two touches around the pitch and one touch finish. Or and then 10 minutes later, all right, all in, one touch finish. And then they'll say just all in, as in, do you know what I mean? So you've got to practice these things. When you're doing crossing and finishing, you know, in training, it's like literally the cross comes in, you've got to hit it first time because you have to replicate what you do in a match. It's very rarely a cross comes in and you've got time to take three or four touches. It's usually cross comes in, bangs, first touch, one touch finish. So I think when he does that, when he doesn't have to think about it and have too many options, I think it suits him a lot better.
Yeah. Because really, I mean, Paul Smith as well missed a good chance where he, you know, the keeper made, to be fair, the keeper made a really good save.
It was a good save.
You got to, you know, hit the target. And I mean, the encouraging thing for me was they didn't play that well, but, you know, they forced like 13 corners. I mean, there were some games early in the season where they weren't even getting a corner. Now,
yeah, I thought they looked a little bit more dangerous from corners. I mean, the first goal come from a set piece. Is that right? Ball into the box and Cook got pulled back.
Into the box, yeah.
Yeah. And it was a decent ball. And, you know, you put the ball into the box from corners or set pieces and you put them in the right area. You have to have the right delivery and you have to have people attacking the ball and wanting to get in front of that defender. But if the delivery isn't there, you can't do anything. And there's many times this season where I've seen us taking corners of free kicks and we're not beating the first man. And that is one of the most annoying things.
Yeah.
I mean, supporters, and I'm a supporter now, but if you don't beat the first man, it's just like, everyone's just got their head in their hands and got to beat the first man and the quality into the box has to be right. And then you've got people attacking it.
It's got to be better as well. I mean, Kenneth Powell's been taking corners and it's just far too, it seems every corner of the keeper's just, it's far too easy for the goalkeeper just to pluck it out of the air. I think they need to, you know, really work on that because, you know, there's not many goals in this team. You know, and when you get set pieces, you've got to make them count. They have to, you know, it's a crucial part of the game.
In years gone by, QPR teams, you know, Warnock's teams always was decent from set pieces to get goals. And you're right, you know, if you centre forwards, I think Dykes have scored three goals this season. You need to start spreading the goals around, as in, you know, the odd centre back coming up and scoring from a header from a corner to help out the team.
Yeah, and also Chris Willock. Didn't start the game, but I didn't mind that decision. I thought I could, You know, what's impressive about Cifuentes is I can sort of see what he's trying to do. And, you know, he'd obviously identified a lack of pace in the Stoke defence, which is why he started Paul Smith. And I thought Paul Smith's pace caused them, you know, caused them problems. Again, his final ball could be better, but, you know, he got the yellow card that got him sent off. And I just think that, you know, he's very enthusiastic and he's willing. You know, and then he swapped wings, brought Willock on, and I thought, you know, Willock looked like he's getting back to some of his old form.
Well, yeah, I mean, whether he meant that, I mean, it was obviously he was going to come on at some stage, whether we were winning, losing, but for the last 20 to 25 minutes, maybe he's thinking he's played a few games and he needs a little rest and there's a big game on Friday. But he came on and he looked good, he looked confident. I think scoring that goal, again, that down at the Loft will do him the world of good, confidence-wise. First goal of the season, first goal for a long time. He put the cross in for, did he put the cross in for the Dykes goal as well?
He did, yeah.
But, you know, that still goes down as an assist in my eyes. So you come on a sub with 30 minutes to go, you score a goal and they're getting an assist, you get a win, you got to go off that pitch very, very happy man.
Yeah, I think that was really encouraging as well. I mean, the ball in the box for Dykes' goal, when he was really firing sort of 18 months ago, Willock, he was doing that quite a lot. He did it. There's a game over up at Coventry and they won where he put a ball like that in for Albert Adoma to score. And Charlie Austin's goal against West Brom right at the end when they beat West Brom 1-0, he did the same there. I think it's really encouraging. I thought, again, after about 2 minutes, he pulled up. It looked like he pulled a calf muscle. It looked like he was going to be, no sooner was he on, he was going off again, and you saw everyone around was going, oh no, this doesn't look good. And he played through it, which I think was encouraging as well.
I know it was that down by the Loft.
Yeah, right, by the byline, yeah.
I think he got stamped on by, I think it was just like a little stamp on his foot of the studs. And fair play. Look, you come on the pitch and you want to make an impression. And you get clobbered after 2 minutes. And you're like, bloody hell, what am I going to do? But, you know, he carried on and he got his just rewards in the end. And, you know, the celebrations for the third goal was, you know, it's like we won the World Cup. It was brilliant.
Yeah, it was. It was. I mean, you know, in junior career, you had, you know, your fair share of injuries and that. I mean, it seems like with Willock, he's sort of not sure whether to trust his body or not. And that, I think, he's been a factor in why he's not been as effective as he was prior to that serious hamstring injury he had. I just think something like tonight, like the other night, could really kickstart what he's thinking, you know, terms of going into games. When you played, you know, what was that like? That kind of, you've had a serious injury, you're coming back. Is it a case of once you get a kick on the knee and it's all right, you're fine, or is it still playing on your mind?
Yeah, I mean, it always will play in your mind, but, you know, hamstrings is a very, it's a very strange, what's the word? It's a very worrying injury, because when you're playing and so training's okay, but because when you're playing and the ball goes there and you're thinking about the game and you react and your hamstring can let you down if it ain't 100%. And it is a worry. And if you have a really bad hamstring injury, and I had a few hamstring injuries, and you come back and it's not right, and it can take its time, and, you know, mentally as well, you want to react. You react and to sprint for a ball. The ball drops, and you just go and sprint for it. That's when your hamstring goes. It's like it can just go, and he has to trust that, and he has to obviously. I would say he would have to be doing a lot of still rehabbing on that, make sure that area of his body is strong, his glutes, all around that hamstring work, because hamstrings can come back very quickly if you don't prepare yourself right. And he'll be thinking now, you know, I've scored a goal, I've assisted. He'll probably think, he only played half an hour, I feel fresh, I can't wait for Friday night's game now to show everyone what I can do again. And like I said, his contract's running out at the end of the season. So he's got a big 5 or 6 months to, you know, either to earn himself a new contract at QPR or to earn himself a contract anywhere, really, because he's a free agent for it personally for himself. Or what QPR going to do? Are they going to, you know, willing to sell? If he ain't going to stay, are they willing to sell him in January? Does he want to go? Does he want to stay? Who knows? But he's got 6 months to prove to the club, to other clubs, what he's all, is he fit and raring to go again?
I think something like that, if he's fit and he's playing well, with his contract having so little to run, what sort of fee would you get from him in January anyway? I think you almost like have to keep him.
No, I think you have to keep him because you have to stay up.
You know, if you the amount of money you'd lose going down as opposed to what you might get for selling him, it sort of, it doesn't really make any
100%. I agree. If he's playing well and they get offered a bid, which what would it be? What's the maximum?
200 grand?
I think maybe, depends, 500 grand, I say. But I'd keep him. You need him.
Yeah.
You need him, unless you've got a ready-made replacement lined up. But
yeah,
for your fit Willock, towards a fit and firing Willock, playing for the rest of the season is a good weapon to have just for staying up. And that's more important than staying up for me.
Yeah, it will be interesting to see what they do. I mean, Ilias Chairs looks like a man reborn since Cifuentes has come in. You know, was strong the other night, has played well in all the games that he's been available for. Still sometimes does a bit too much, I think. But I mean, if an offer comes in for him and it's a kind of sizable offer, that's, I think, because I mean, the squad does need strengthening. They need some bodies in January. You know, if you're gonna, I think they need another midfielder. They obviously need a striker. You know, would you sell Chair if
he said? Is there money to spend with this FFP? I don't know. I mean, they've done naming rights of the ground. They've done naming rights of the state. One stand. Is that money that can? Is that for FFP or is that for money to sign some players in? In January, but also we haven't got any loan players, so they can get some loan players in.
Yeah,
and I'm sure they have to be looking at the loan market.
Oh yeah,
to help. They have to be, and to strengthen the squad. Depending on an offer, what would you get for Chair? I'm not too. It's a difficult one because if you've got a fit and firing Willock, Willock hasn't really played much for 6 or 7 months, and Chair leaves, and then he's sort of. I know you want them both playing together, but he's sort of a ready-made replacement for Chair, and maybe they might want more pace on the left-hand side. Because Chair really, you know, he's more of a number 10, sort of playing on the left, cutting in. But they might, I don't know what the manager wants. He might think, I want more legs down that left-hand side, more pace, and then creates more room for Willock playing in the number 10 role.
Now, whenever a new manager comes in, it creates opportunities of players that perhaps were overlooked by the previous manager. That's certainly been the case with Elijah Dixon Bonner, who's, you know, gone from serial bench warmer to kind of starting through the last four games. What have you made of him, Kev, from what you the brief sights you've seen of him?
What he brings to the team is enthusiasm, athleticism. He's very young and that enthusiasm can carry for the first two or three or four games and five games. It'd be interesting to see if he keeps playing, how he'll carry on in the next three or four games, if he can carry on the standard that he's set in the last few games. But he's done really well. He's given us a bit of legs in midfield, a little bit like last year with Luke Amos when he played. Give us legs and enthusiasm, but the only problem with Luke, he didn't play enough. So legs, enthusiasm, hungry, and he's decent on the ball. Yeah, he's done well.
He's very positive, I think. He always wants the ball to feet. He's always looking to go forward with the ball, you know, progressive passing. I really like him. I saw him a little bit on the 21s teams last season and early this season. And, you know, he's got a really good attitude as well. his attitude's excellent. You know, when you're at these games, you can hear what's being said on the pitch and that. And, you know, he's very vocal and he just seems a good kid, you know, a good lad. He's, you know, obviously his pedigree strong. He started his career at Arsenal and then he goes to Liverpool and, you know, so he's obviously been well coached in his sort of, earlier days of his career. So I think, you know, they might have found one there on a free transfer. He's done very well.
Well, you say well coached and Arsenal and Liverpool, yeah, and with the new manager coming in, trying to play a more possession style type of football, then it obviously suits him.
Yeah. And what have you made your early impressions of the manager then, mate?
Well, he looks... Well, I was watching him from the sideline. He's very enthusiastic on the sideline and telling people what he wants and what to do. His interviews have been good. I quite like his interview against Norwich when he said, well, you know, at the end of the day, we need results. It's not all about possession and passing. We actually need to win games. And that's 100%, you know, I know obvious, but previous managers have, you know, talked about, oh, we're doing this, we're doing that, without getting any results and not talking about getting results. So, you know, that Tuesday game against Stoke will, you know, obviously be a relief, not only for the fans and the club, but for the manager to get off the mark, because the longer you leave not winning your first game as manager, you know, it will play on your mind. So I think he's done a really good job. He's sort of gone back to what QPR has been over the last 4 to 5 years, trying to play a brand of football that is more possession-based and keeping it and creating chances. He's done well so far. Roll on Friday. We win again on Friday. Then I would give him a 7 out of 10. We win on Friday, he's an 8 out of 10. We lose, he goes back to a 6. You know what football's all about. It's winning games. And at the moment, QPR, we need to win games because of the situation we're in position-wise in the league.
Do you think, I mean, a win is a win. It doesn't matter what the scoreline is. But it does feel a bit more significant, the fact they won 4-2 rather than winning 1-0. Do you think there's something in that as well?
Well, I think there's something in that is that you're 2-1 down and you come back and win 4-2. That's a better than winning 1-0 for me. Especially, you know, because the crowd deserve 4 goals. I mean, the supporters have turned up in their numbers at every home game and haven't seen like one win in a year. So to get a win at home and to score 4 goals, you know, the crowd go home so much more happier than scraping a 1-0. I know you only get 3 points, but you know, at the end of the day, entertainment business is what football is, and to win 4-2 is, you know, a really good result. And also, we haven't scored 4 goals for ages, and we need to get goals, and goal difference has to be a lot better. You never know what happens at the end of the season. Goal difference might come into it.
And in terms of just belief around the team, I mean, you've been around plenty of teams that have been in bad runs and you get a good result. How much of a difference can it just lift the mood of everyone? But just for sort of like guys that aren't sort of peripheral players, like Larkesh, maybe Cannon, who's just coming in, their self-worth, their self-belief, how important would that be?
They obviously would have went in on yesterday for a warm down. But if you're going in after every game for a warm down and you've lost again, it's a little bit, you know, it's a natural thing. The fans would be the same. It's doom and gloom. You come in on Wednesday after winning 4-2, after being 2-1 down, and everyone's absolutely buzzing and having a laugh, and the atmosphere in the training ground would be completely different to what it would have been if you had lost. And, you know, my son went into school on Wednesday. He was buzzing. He was like, "Don't take the mick out of me anymore. We won 4-2. So I'm like happy for him. So he goes to school. I'm going to show them, look, we won 4-2. So it's not just the players, the fans. The players will just be replicating what the fans would be feeling as well. You know, absolutely delighted that we won 4-2 and managed to score 4 goals at home.
So when the games come around, you know, as everyone says, thick and fast, the most overused phrase in world football. But Friday night, tough game.
At the end of the day, it comes thick and fast.
They do, they do. Trip up to Deepdale. There's probably closer matches you could have had on a Friday night after a, you know, a midweek game. But the result probably didn't go in QPR's way last night. Huddersfield getting a kind of surprise 2-1 win at Sunderland. Not ideal, but I think, weirdly, I think that might kind of work in favour of the mindset because, you know, you don't want to get too carried away by one win. And it's like, oh, God, we're 6 points adrift again. We need to kind of focus straight back onto Preston. I know managers and players would always say, we're only focusing on the next game. But sort of psychologically, I think
you're
back to square one. So
you've got to look after your own game, really. I mean, if QPR win matches, they'll get out of trouble. Simple as that. You can't worry. I know it's like you're always looking at results and stuff, and fair play to Huddersfield, was a great result at Sunderland. I didn't expect that. But then, like you said, it might work in our favour because it might keep the lads on their toes, saying we haven't achieved hardly, we haven't achieved anything yet. We've got to go to Preston and get some sort of a result. We don't get beat. You know, you win your games at home and you pick up points away, and that's a recipe for success in the Championship. So they've got to go to Preston and get a result of some sort and capable of winning. But you don't lose that game.
Yeah. Well, Deepdale hasn't been a historically happy hunting ground for Rangers, although they did win there last year. Jimmy Dunn's goal sealing a 1-0 win in Neil Critchley's first game and his only win in charge. They going in on the back of a, you know, they got thumped by Middlesbrough on Tuesday, I think it was, 4-0. And, you know, were turned over at home by Cardiff, who scored two goals in the last, deep into injury time to win 2-1. So, you know, they're now on a great run of form at the moment. It's, you know, what are your thoughts, Kev? Do you think
it's a tough game. They'll be obviously pressing after two poor results, especially the one, you know, the one against Middlesbrough. They're going to come out, I think they'll come out the traps flying because the manager will get right stuck into them, try and get the crowd on side. And I just believe if QPR weather that storm and can get the ball down and start passing it, then they can get a really good result on Friday. But tough game, Friday night's on TV. You know, everyone will be up for it. Everyone's thinking, well, I'm on TV. I've got to show my friends. People are watching them. I've got to show my friends. I don't want to embarrass them. I've got to put in a performance. And it's a tough game. And you've got to go into that game. QPR were going into that game with a lot more confidence than they have. And Preston, you know, confidence has been dented. But still a tough game away from home. Preston, long journey. It's going to be cold. This is like a test of QPR's mentality after winning on Tuesday. Can they follow up 3 days later with a good result against Preston?
Did you like the Friday night games when you were playing? I'm not a big fan of them myself.
Yeah, I didn't mind because you usually get the weekend off.
I thought you might say that.
Yeah, didn't mind them. not Preston away. Maybe at home. I didn't mind them. I always like playing, especially at home, I always like playing in the evening. I like playing QPR at Loftus Road in the evening. Yeah. Not that I didn't like, I love playing all the time, but I like the evening games as well. But it's tough, and it's tough for the fans to get up there. I'm sure they'll be up there in fine voice. It's going to be a tough game. I'm going to go 1-1. I'm going to take 1-1, Ian.
Yeah. With the games like that, what sort of time would you get home? I mean, the coach would go from Lancashire. Well, would you ever stay? Would the team stay up there and go back Saturday morning? What would players prefer? You get it out of the way and get home?
I think it would be more a case of get home. You get home about 8 o'clock, 11, half 11 by the time you get out. You're looking at 3:30, 4 if you're lucky. And the thing is, you can't sleep on them coach journeys because you're still full of adrenaline from the match. Well, I do anyway. And I'm sure they won't be in. When's the next game? Is it the following Saturday?
Yeah, Hull.
So I would say they have Saturday and Sunday off to recover. maybe been told to go for a light jog on Sunday and a stretch out and be ready for training on Monday.
Yeah. So I imagine those coach journeys, when you win, there's nothing better, is there, on the long journey?
No, in the end, coming home after a loss is like very depressing, because you can't sort of have, you can't be seen to having a laugh and joke on the way home when you've lost. But if you get a sort of result, then again, the atmosphere and the mood is so much better. You can mess about, you can have a laugh, play cards, watch a film, all that sort of stuff.
So what generally happens then after a game? Are they have like a chef on the bus who lays on dinner and what have you, or is it all food that's bussed in from?
I did
bump into like the players actually when I was coming back from Rotherham, all coming out of the service station. There was like, I pulled into the service station and there's a giant coach, and you think, that's a football bus, that is. It's definitely a team bus. And saw the front, it was a QPR bus, and there's a load of squad coming out with, you know, Nando's and McDonald's and
the thing with those sort of the diet sort of goes out the window after a match. It's basically get some food in you as quickly as possible to recover. And it doesn't matter what it is. But depends what food in the olden days we used to have. The kit man used to make the food. There would be a kitchen at the back, and it would be like ready meals for Marks and Spencers and stuff like that. Jerry, you always used to have a crate of beer on the coach for the lads, which was good because there was only a few of us would be drinking them. there'd be no beers on the bus now. And then they might stop off at a service station just because to stretch your legs and a bit bored. But yeah, there'll be food. There might even, sometimes you stop off or you get a delivery from Domino's onto the coach. When you get on there, there'll be just pizzas everywhere. Sometimes, you know, if it was Grimsby away, it would always be fish and chips and stuff like that. So it depends. Depends, and the orders would be going in today if they've got ready meals or what you want or what pizza do you want. So they'll be all ordering it, and it should be all as they walk on the coach after the shower and changed, food ready to go.
Do clubs, away teams, Jimmy, lay on food for the away team in the dressing room after? Is that how it works?
No, not really. Maybe a plate of sandwiches, but it would be you'd find out, I don't know who would do it, the secretary would find out, or the kit man would find out from their kit man or whatever, where's the local Domino's or where's the local chip shop, and get it delivered onto the coach as soon as they get on. There'll be food ready for you, because you've got a certain window of sort of opportunity to replenish, and I think it's like half an hour to an hour, and you have to get some food down, yeah, or else it doesn't work. That's the sports science thinking.
Good stuff. Right. I'm going to share your prediction, actually. I think it will be a draw too. I think, and it'll be a good point up there. I think it's a tough turnaround that up there. I went to university in Preston, and I know it's a long way away, particularly on a Friday night. It's a real, that M6 is a real pain on a Friday night. So coming away with something there, it just kind of, you know, it's not going to be enough to get out of the bottom three if you get a point. Well, a win's not going to be able to get at the bottom three either, but it just sort of keeps alive that sort of, you know, decent run of form since the Fuentes has taken over. I'm going to go for a 1-1 as well. Boring, I know. Sorry about that. But we do have a lot of 1-1 draws at Preston, actually. It seems to be the kind of the mean score whenever we play at Digdale. It's a 1-1 draw. So
be interesting, you know, because we are capable of winning that game. There's no doubt about it. Be interesting to see if he keeps Willock on the bench or he starts him. I would say keep him on the bench, ready to come on at some stage for the last half an hour. Because I think he'll play Smith just to stretch maybe that little bit extra pace, just to stretch the defence and that option. But we'll see. I'll be watching closely.
Good stuff. Well, thanks a lot for your time, Kev. And thanks for listening, everyone. And as I say every week, we are also on Spotify and iTunes and various other hosting platforms. So, and we'll see you again next week.
Social Podcast Network.
It's time for today's Lucky Land horoscope with Victoria Cash.
Life's gotten mundane, so shake up the daily routine and be adventurous with a trip to Lucky Land. You know what they say, your chance to win starts with a spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com to play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.